January 29th of 2024. I'm glad I did not say 2023 because I would have totally made that mistake if I wasn't thinking about it. This is the 203rd version of Science of the Southlands. Let me get some programming reminders out of the way before we get really rolling here. Our softball written preview coming pretty soon, I imagine. Next week's going to be our baseball preview episode on the podcast feed here. If you haven't already heard, I interviewed what's their names? John Gieseler and Ben King last week. That episode is up, talking about they're both co-captains on the baseball team this year and talking about their experiences, the rivalries, the changes. There's so many changes. 12 transfer players. That's a lot of changes. So a lot going on there. That was a fun talk. And the clean old-fashioned hate game against Georgia is on sale. Tickets for that game are on sale as well if you want to go to that. It's a Friday night game this year is the one at Georgia Tech. To start, though, this is the softball preview episode, and we have someone that has been circling our just are like, wait a second, this person needs to show up here on this podcast because one, on campus, which is very, very important, but also actively a student, one of the co-hosts of the Ramblin' Wreck radio show on WREK 91.1, Madison Myers. Madison, thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you guys for inviting me. I'm so excited to chat with you guys today.
Jake, last year's softball season was not, I think, what we wanted it to be by any stretch of the imagination, considering the fact they lost more games than they won. 26 and 27 last year, 7 and 17 in the ACC, at least 5 and 5 in one run games. I thought that was worse, and I checked that today. I was like, okay, they had some fight in them when games were close, so that was good to see, including a really good walk off against Auburn. But we had the schedule of death, which, Jake, you've mentioned a bunch of times that with how the schedule rotation works in the ACC softball, sometimes you get lucky and sometimes you are just getting absolutely murdered. And at least it wasn't super intentional, but it just because of how the structure is. But we had that last year.
Yeah, I think we kind of hedged last year going, at least I kind of did in my head that if you're drawing Clemson, Florida State, Duke, you're really playing from a hole in a way that I don't necessarily think they did the year before. Obviously, ACC, tough slate. It's a conference that's improved a lot. We've used a lot of the points we've used about volleyball to describe ACC softball, and I
Right.
think that's still a valid take. Maybe even more so as the conference expands. But we can talk about that in a little bit. But I think last year, yes, the schedule was hard. But I'm also not totally willing to just kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think important points to make is that pitching did drop off pretty extensively. A 4.47 team ERA. That's earned run average over 7 innings. It's not over nine, as
Yes.
baseball would be. That is one thing that I think a lot of people just kind of put in the back pocket and don't really make the conversion in their head. That's a 4.47 over seven from a 2.92 in 2022. Blake Nelliman and Chandler Dennis have really been consistent aspects of this staff for a really long time at this point. Chandler Dennis, a one-time Michigan transfer, but I believe this is her third year on the flats, if I'm not mistaken,
I
right,
believe
Jack?
so.
Not four.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, because I know I saw her pitch when I went on a couple road trips 2 springs ago, but I didn't want to misspeak and say this would be her fourth spring. But yeah, I think the schedule and the pitching are kind of linked. I mean, if you're going to be playing big bats in terms of, your Florida States, your Clemsons, your Duke. I mean, heck, Clemson had a player get named both as a pitcher and a DP to the All ACC preseason team. That's a name we've said a lot on this podcast, Valerie Cagle. But it's they're linked, but they're also not, if that makes sense.
Right. Madison, it was not exactly, I mean, as we mentioned numbers wise, not the greatest. It's also just concerning when your pitchers, the same pitchers, just jump at 0.5 in ERA year over year. But they're both coming back also for their 5th years. So when you saw that they were coming back, what were your thoughts there?
I think I was very excited to see that Chandler had decided to use her extra year. And I think it's very promising, especially now that we have a new pitching coach, which Chandler had. I know you had like the discussion with Eileen Morales on the new coaching changes, and then Chandler Dennis also had a she had a talk about how she didn't go into too many of the details, but said that there were a lot of adjustments made, and I think we hear the same with baseball. They also have a new pitching coach, and I think what's happened is these new coaches coming in are trying to break them down because there's something that was fundamentally wrong with had to have been for them to have that significant of a jump. But it also was with the schedule and the fact that we have only been using these two pitchers for the last couple of years, and they are tired. I mean, I cannot imagine the
There was
exhaustion.
there was no relief for them.
No.
And Jack, I think it's poignant in just kind of peering behind the curtain. Actually, Jack, I don't know if this is public yet, but are you a social media star yet, or am I too unplugged for that?
I mean, I don't count having 322 followers as a star, so.
I meant the reason that you texted me asking me for a scouting breakdown of Blake Nelson
Oh, well,
a
that's not
couple
happening.
weeks ago. Oh, it's not happening.
That's not happening
Okay.
anymore.
And again, peering behind the curtain just a little bit. Jack was like, "Hey, could you get me a scouting breakdown of Blake Nelman?" And I asked a couple of players who haven't they didn't line up against her last year, but dare I say, like it if you can, get some recall on players that haven't faced her in a year or two, like that shows how consistent the staff has been. One thing I did want to highlight while we're still talking about some past results, is that even when Georgia Tech went dare I say, a pretty good 38-18 going to the Florida Regional in the spring of 2022. They still went 11-13 in conference.
Fair, yeah, fair.
Like it's not like it was, it's not like it was dire, or
That's not, I mean, yeah, I know, I mean,
it's not dire, but
no.
if we're comparing apples to apples, it's not like we're saying, oh man, they really fell off, big change, et cetera, whatever. 11-13 to 7-17 is not a huge step down, at least in my humble of opinions. Whereas, you'd think that it was okay, they're losing six, seven, eight more games. I really think Georgia Tech didn't collect in these other peripheral games, the non-con where maybe you're picking up a couple wins and
Right,
that's a big difference there.
like if you switch the Alabama State game, we have a winning record last season, and they were
Well, that's
of the worst teams in college softball, and we lost to them at home. So,
I would argue that's one that you can never and should never lose, but that's neither here nor there. Just one more point in terms of consistency year over year. 2022 versus 2023, we saw Boston College, Clemson, Duke, Florida State in three-game series in both years. We saw Louisville, NC State, Notre Dame, and Syracuse in 2022 versus North Carolina, Pitt, Virginia, and Virginia Tech, and the other Virginia Tech essentially being the big difference in terms of schedule quality there.
Gotcha. Of the ranked teams we played last year, number 5 Clemson, number 7 Florida State, and number 10 Duke in the ACC, we lost all 10 of the games we had against them. And Duke was our final game in the ACC tournament. At least we beat Notre Dame to get wait, yeah, we beat Notre Dame to get there. So, I mean, we got one in the tournament, which I guess is nice, but still. And then hitting wise, just to the last glances of last season, Emma Kauf, Madison Dobbins, Ella Edgman, and Emma Mangini all hit over 300. Mangini was a late season revelation for the team. She had a feeling because of injuries and just started raking immediately and just getting those pop singles which are very customary in softball. So that was good to see. Pitching ranks, I think this speaks to Madison, your point of just how exhausted they were. 11th in ERA in walks last year, third dead last in the ACC in home runs allowed, fourth in strikeouts though. That's they. Their stuff, I think the evidence is like their stuff was still there, but you still gotta get the rest of it done. It weirdly seems very similar to how baseball was acting last year as well. Like stuff, sure, that was there, but they still just allowed just clobbering amounts of runs throughout the year too. Hitting about middle to the back of the pack. When you lose Trisha Ewald, who only hits homers and walks, you're just gonna have a little bit of regression. That's just how that's gonna go. Second in fielding percentage. So defense is good. That's always good to see. Any lasting thoughts on 2023 before we move on from either of you?
I want to back up Madison's point one more thing about getting tired. I think it is completely evidenced by the fact that Tech in the re in the their last two regular season series and last one non-conference game, they went a combined 1-6. That is a That is a
Yeah.
staff that is tired, and that includes, a home slate against a fairly comparable North Carolina team, in addition to the tough Duke series. And most of the games they played close, including a 12-5 win. But that's a hallmark of a tired staff, I would say.
What you got, Madison?
Yeah, I think it was very visible, like just seeing them out there. There were a lot of times where we would switch out Blake with Chandler or Chandler with Blake in the middle of a game, and it would be a Friday game. There's still more games in the
Right.
weekend,
Yeah.
and I would be sitting there like, well,
Yep.
what are we doing tomorrow? What are we doing Sunday? If we're get like it, bring out Sophia, bring out someone else. Like if they need a if we need to change it to someone else. And I think that's something that when I listened to your talk with Eileen that she mentioned of having more of a rotation and using more of the pitchers. And I know we brought in another like freshman lefty, which is really good because we were lacking there. And I think like Sophia showed a lot of good things that I think maybe with the new pitching coach this year, we're going to see a lot of stronger outings from her as well. So I think it's very hopeful, but
Yeah, just to name the names behind Blake and Ch and Blake and Chandler, we had Jaden Studebaker, who was a freshman last year, Kinsey Norton, who was a sophomore last year, and Sophia Voiles, who was a sophomore last year. Sophia ended up getting most of that third string, I guess, in or second string innings. Kinsey got some of them in there. Jaden Studebaker made her debut against Clemson. Her first at bat was against Valerie Cagle, and that ball didn't exactly stay in Shirley Mewbourne Clemens Field. It went a long way. I felt very bad for her in the moment. So hopefully that does not happen this year. But I mean, and then we added, and we'll get to the roster, but yeah, we absolutely added pitching depth this year, and theoretically change of coach, just different ways to think about the pitching. You just are able to, and just year-over-year improvement, and you have to think that there's going to be at least someone else there that could eat up some innings over a weekend series.
Yeah, and I want to frame just a little bit kind of the transition that we're seeing there, because I think a lot of our listeners are probably at least a maybe this isn't true, but I would assume at least a little bit more plugged into baseball, given the media access and coverage that they seem to draw. Much how Danny Burrell was very he came well regarded to Georgia Tech out of the Yankees system. That's the same kind of context we were getting with the previous pitching regime. So I think the two teams, as it relates to pitching staff, are going to be in a really interesting spot coming into this year. Not quite the same level of previous accolades, whether that's SEC or MLB, depending on the situation. But yeah, that's kind of how I transition, at least in my head, us into this coming season. Is the pitching, I think, will be the biggest question mark.
Yeah, we'll get it. We'll do a little segment at the end here about what needs to be the biggest leap. But I feel like it's going to be that. Let's dive into actually who is on this team. Notable returners, which is I think going to be most of your starting lineup here that we saw last year. Jin Soloyo at shortstop, one of Nelleman or Chandler starting most of the games. Ella Edgman, Abby Hughes, Sandra Beth Pritchett, Mallory Black, Sarah Beth Allen, Madison Dobbins, Reese Hunter, maybe being the starting catcher now that Emma Kalf is out. Emma Mangini, if assuming that her bat is where it was last year, and Paige Vukadinovich. All these players got a ton of innings. Like this is the bulk. This is your starting squad for the most part. I think some of these freshmen maybe could, and so I don't want to. Does anyone have any thoughts on the returning players? It just seems like more of the same here for the most part. Unless we're gonna need to see some games to see who made big leaps and who didn't, anyways. So, and they didn't exactly let us or have a way for us to watch the fall games, so we don't know who was excellent in the fall games. Okay. Well, let's go to the newbies then. No one hearing nothing, going once, going twice.
I was going to say, I do have a commentary. I
Okay.
think the freshman to sophomore jump is probably the biggest gap I would be, or not gap, but improvement I'd be willing to look at more so than newbies. Maybe that's just because we've seen him play a little bit before. I think they're folks that you can kind of, again, draw a line in the sand and say, hey, old staff, new staff, or old assistant staff, new assistant staff. How's that going to shake out? Yeah, you're going to need to see him play a little bit, but at least from how the game will go, or like the games will go, I think that's going to be kind of the leading indicator, if you will, is how do those veterans react to potentially more playing time, or at least new instruction. And I do want to make one more point. I think this kind of got lost in the COVID year shuffle. The effects of playing against a number of 24, 25-year-old players when you are 18 is kind of crazy. I think that's something that we're going to see wash
True, yeah.
out, if you will, wash out of the sport more and more. I think, Jack, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. This should be the last year we see any COVID extra eligibility, barring some red shirts. But the
Yep.
last 3 years have been an absolutely brutal time to be a freshman player. And that's why I think that the freshman sophomore, not only getting older and more instruction, but the washing out
Yes.
of the 24, 25-year-old players. I mean, that's just
Right.
how it goes, right?
Yeah, no, that's gonna be the nature of these college sports that don't have real professional landing spots for the best players that could, when they're 23, 24, actually make that jump and leave college. I guess technically early when you have a fifth year available to you. But yeah, I think that's a good point to have there. Yeah, let's jump onto the newbies here. We have Mikayla Caulfield, gonna be our left-handed pitcher, Gracie Hillman in the outfield, Grayson Tucker in the infield, and then Tiffany Deming, who is the only transfer. She came from USC Upstate, also in a transfer. Keep in mind, this is the number seven recruiting class in the country outside of Tiffany. Madison, I assume you had the same reaction when we saw the names just kind of keep trickling in and trickling in on that day where they were announcing. People's like, wait, top 100, top 100. How are they only getting top 100 players? And now here we are, top 10 in the country, which feels absolutely necessary considering the level of talent we have to play basically most weekends throughout the season.
Yeah, I think it's a huge indicator of where the program is going. And I think the faith that we can have in Eileen Morales. And I think it's also the couple of appearances that we've had in the NCAA tournament are just massive. Like
They're big, yeah.
the exposure that this team has had over the last couple of years, I think has been huge for recruiting. I think our name is now in the mix of, we're on the projection that we should be going into the top 25, maybe in the next, 1, 2 years. And I think all of these, like, top 100, there's some recruits that are in the top, 30, 40 players in the country. It's pretty impressive, of what we're going to get. And I think that, the last couple of years, like you said, with having all of the extra COVID years, it's been really difficult to see the freshmen make a true impact. But I think this is the year we can see a freshman moving into the starting lineup. I think especially because we haven't really had a true power hitter since,
Trisha, yeah.
a couple of years ago. So, yeah. And like, that was what we saw missing last year, is we left so many runners on base. And if one of these freshmen can step in and say, like, I'll hit the homers, or the transfer. I know, Tiffany Domingue, maybe, I know she had a lot of homers, where she transferred from at USC Upstate. I think it could be a really good spot for them to slide in if they can make it there, or even just knocking hits in, because we saw now with Emma Kauf gone, that's a lot of doubles that now we're not going to have, which is going to also be a big miss because she had so many RBIs. There's a lot of gaps that could be filled.
Yeah, she
And
go
I
ahead.
want to put something out there, just for clarity. This is the number 30th ranked class. The 2023 signing day was for the 2024 class. So I think the point we want to kind of hammer home there is reinforcements are coming. They just might not be this year. I think one of the more interesting aspects of that class is that it's also quite large. I don't know how much that contributes to the number seven, the size, but in terms of this incoming freshman class, I think the 30th rating I saw was when the class was announced, is Hillman, Tucker, Cofield. Yeah, Hillman, Tucker, and Cofield alone was the 30th ranked class in the country. Which again, if you're pulling three players to be in the
That's
top
great. Yeah.
30, I think
That's
that's
great. Yeah.
pretty that that's a very high aggregate quality there. So I did want to clarify that one point. And I think when you kind of zoom out, that's really the tack I want to take, is this year might not be the year that everything comes together, but I think it's one where you have to at least tread water or
Yes,
put
agreed.
some sort of improvement behind it, because that like we said, there's going to be opportunities for these freshmen to really dive in. And it does show that at least two of the three of them coming from within, the state of Georgia, one from not that far away in Hoover, it's really protecting your own turf because a lot of very high quality softball comes out of the Southeast.
Absolutely, yeah. I want to make a note. What Madison's been mentioning in my interview with Eileen Morales, that which I put up a couple weeks ago. I read this stat line to Eileen, but I'm going to read it here again. This is about Mikayla Caulfield and her pitching stats when she was at Whitewater High School out of Fayetteville. Her senior year, or was it total year? Yeah, in 2022, 0.36 ERA, 237 strikeouts, an 0.77 batting average against, and 18 walks and 118 and a third innings of work, and has two no hitters and a perfect game to her name in high school. It is coming for biomedical engineering. So this girl is about to literally just do everything that you possibly can as an athlete, which I think is one of the cool parts of the softball team, is you usually get a nice diversity of the majors and volleyball as well, of people doing high level sports and also just killing it academically at the same time. Yeah, Caulfield, I would not be shocked if she pitches this year, or at least she's going to get some run, I imagine. Just if there's a spot ready for her, see where she's at. Like, the reason to not, if she works and helps us win games, put her out there. Gracie Hillman, 5'10" freshman. She is the one from Bama, as Jake mentioned. She set some records out there. She has the season batting average record for her high school, Hoover High School. And high schools in the South are not exactly a young thing, so she's broke probably. I don't know what the actual specifics are, but that is a record I imagine stood for a little bit there. And then who's left here? Who was left?
Grayson Tucker.
Grayson Tucker, yes, infield, yes. Maybe isn't going to be the one that breaks out this year, just because there is a lot of infield depth on this team right now. Would be great if she did. Another one of the Lassiters, Blake Nelman, also Lassiter High School. She was the MVP at Lassiter High School twice. 6A Player of the Year in 2021. Where she was number 41 coming out of the top 100. So she played third, second, and shortstop. So can play anywhere. Played travel ball. Did everything you needed to do. Had a bunch of hits. She had 134 RBIs in 138 games. So an RBI game, that'll work when you're hitting 409. I like that a lot. So any major lingering, let me mention here, any lingering thoughts of the freshman before I get to Tiffany?
Don't think so.
Done. Okay, great. So let's go to Tiffany then. Tiffany DeBanks, so she's a graduate. She was at USC Upstate beforehand. She played 4 years, so she is a full-on fifth-year senior. So we've got three of them on the team this year. She last year in the Big South Conference was all second team, made the all-tournament team, and was a player of the week at one point. She played all 55 of their games last year and hit 347 with 15 homers. 15 homers last year would have put her first on our team. Sarah Beth Allen had 13 to lead the team. So if the homers are there, as you mentioned, Madison, that's going to be massive, because you got to clear the bases. You got to clear the bases. We can get on base, but we did not have those power hitters that could rake and clear the backs. And also Emma Kauf, while she was our top hitter, we needed her to get on base too, just to have someone to clear in as well. So she usually wasn't up there pulling people in because she just needed to get on. She had 99 total bases, which far and away was better than everybody else. So now that I'm talking about Emma, for one, so she has her fifth year. She would transfer to Oregon, and she graduated absolutely no fault of here, just to use your fifth year, use grad school somewhere else. We saw this with a bunch of other athletes in the past couple of years that have COVID years. What do we think is going to be the hole left, and how do we fill Emma Kauf if we even can this year?
I don't think you can, to be honest. I mean, the best player on the team graduated. Like, you need a lot of people to make very incremental progress, and you can equal an Emma Kauf, which I think is very possible, but that's not a plug and play type thing. That's seeing existing players get better, which again, very possible, but I think walking in and expecting one of the freshmen to be, hey, this is new Emma, like that's just not how it works.
That's going to be hard.
And I think what we saw from Reese Hunter last year at catcher was pretty promising. She had some really nice plays in the few games that she was able to play. But I think the hitting is not going to come from her. It's going to have to be someone else. And it could be I mean, we saw a lot of improvements from Emma Mungini. She came when she came in at the end of the year. Like maybe she makes some kind of jump over the year. Maddie Dahlin's only back from injury. So perhaps she also made a change because that was another thing. New hitting coaches as well. And, you know, and other assistant coaches helping out there. So there could be significant improvements that we see, you know, when you go a whole year later and then the pressure of having really good freshmen coming in, it could cause the players to want to make the jump that maybe they wouldn't have otherwise, especially seeing that there's a gap of Emma Talf. I think everyone's going to want to be that top spot.
Yeah, you mentioned Reese Hunter. She played in 27 games last year. She started 24 of them. Emma didn't end up catching every game. She could throw in the outfield. She would do BDP or something like that. So she moved around a lot. She had a couple. She only hit 219, but she had a decent slugging, 375 for a lot of her. She had a lot of big hits. Of note, I just look at the stats from last year. It's kind of creeping ahead, but if there's one player whose average we need to see jump up, it's Jin Soleo, because she has to play because of her defense, but she was a sub 200 hitter last year. And that's just not going to fly if we're going to drive people in. I mean, she was usually at the back of the order, so it was play. You put her where she had to be in that case. But the thing is she steals bases. She was 16 of 18 last year, stolen bases when she did get on. So that's if she can just find some way to get her slap single. She does not hit for power. She had a homer, but she does not hit for power in the college level. So finding a way to get her on base is going to be huge. Keep mentioning the coaches also. Every single coach on this team outside of Eileen is different from last season. Hunter Bunch is the assistant coach for hitting right now. Aaron Dixon is here for pitching, I believe. Kelsey Bennett is a grad assistant, came from Virginia Tech, and then Devin Boland is director of ops, who had some time at NC State as well. As their wait, NC State, do I have that right? Yes.
Think
So
so.
yeah, so every so I mean it's a wholesale. I mean, as we mentioned a bunch of times before, it's obviously something was at work and changed the voices in the room, and so we'll see how this pans out. This will be very, very interesting to see in that regard. Last of the departures here, Auburn Dupree, who y'all may remember from last season, she now transferred to UAB. Megan Cassidy graduated. Caroline Davis graduated. Ryan Keefe, who was a freshman last year, did not really get any time out there, transferred to UMass. And then, as we mentioned, Emma Kalf went to Oregon. Okay, so I mentioned Jin Soleo possibly making a leap. Is there anybody else y'all want to see make that leap? I know, Jake, you mentioned the freshman to sophomore jump, which hopefully just the being around another year is going to do something. I mean, theoretically, that should go for everybody. Everyone's here an extra year now at this point. But is there who needs to make the biggest jump here or make a notable jump?
I really
Go
liked
ahead,
what I
Madison. Go
saw.
ahead.
Sorry.
No, you go.
I really liked what I saw from Paige Bogdanovich over at first base. As a defender, I thought she did really well, and she was hitting fairly well. You know, for it being her first time out there this season, and she hit 271. It was mostly just singles, but I think if she can make a jump in some sort of way of bigger hits, I think she'd be a really good presence because I think she's a solid first baseman, that I would like to see her claim that as her role.
I think defense in the corner, not so much third base, but first base defense, corner outfield defense, I think it's a little bit underrated. Those are, commonly places where you put a big bat out there and say, hey, you got a little bit less field to take care of. But I think a plus defensive first baseman, if you can bring along some pop, and we saw Trisha Awol be a very effective option there for, on aggregate a really long time. I would still say that that role is open for the taking. So I think that's a generally something I would agree with. But in general, there's a lot of players on this team with a lot of experience. Jack, you noted that we had three players finish above 300 in hitting last year.
Four, four.
Four, yeah, sorry, three returners, right? Dobbins, Edgemond, and McGinney. So I got ahead of myself with the math, I guess. But if you can build around that core, maybe your fresh people who were freshmen last year, i.e. that Vukadinovich is actually who I had in mind when I was, talking about going from freshman to sophomore, maybe a new voice in the room. So Yeah, I would echo that, and I really am curious to see incoming pitching. Just some fresh blood there, you know.
Yep, agreed. We mentioned leaving people on base. I just saw this in the stat page. It was in the small print. But believe it or not, we had fewer people left on base than all of our opponents last year. We left 294 people on base. Our opponents had 319 people left on base last year. So we actually won that battle. That's still way
It's
too
'cause they
many.
all came in, Jack. I mean, is that unfair to say?
I
A lot of them
guess.
scored.
No, left on base. No, that's not what that means. They
Left on
didn't score.
base?
Left on base at the end of an inning. Yeah, they did. These people didn't
Yeah.
score. They didn't score.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you said we had a small amount of
We
those. My
prevented. We per
apologies.
yeah. We prevented people.
Oh, okay. There
Yeah,
we
yeah,
go.
yeah,
Never
yeah,
mind.
yeah. So I mean, still 294 left on base over 50-something games. You'd hope it'd be a little bit better, but anyways. So we could get out of jams is what that also means there, and that absolutely speaks to the experience of Chandler and Blake. So I hope that's also the case this year. Okay. This is kind of we kind of were answering the question, how are we going to win this season by saying how we're going to make the leap, but is there any, I guess, game state things that y'all remember from last year that stuck out in your heads? Just like, oh man, if there's these one or two things that we just couldn't get over the hump of that would have helped us maybe win one or two more games.
We left a lot of people on, or like we let a lot of people on base comes to mind. I feel like our pitchers were often working out of jams, which does not do themselves many favors. But then again, going up against Florida State, Duke, Clemson, Virginia Tech, in terms of your schedule, those are the top four teams in the conference in a
It's hard.
very good. They're all top 25 teams. You don't catch Florida State, Duke, or Clemson this year. Virginia Tech, Louisville, and Notre Dame were all tournament teams last year, and you do get them. But I mean, we said that next year might be when the cavalry comes in, but in terms of the schedule this year, you've got a really tough start in Clearwater. All of those teams that are in that tournament are extremely high quality. Stanford, LSU, Minnesota, Northwestern, Tennessee, and Oklahoma State, those are all very, very high quality Power Five opponents. That's scary. But win one, win two. That's a winning weekend for me, honestly. Going 1-5 or 2-4, and make it up in ACC play because you're going to get more Power Five opportunities. But that's a really tough start. I think that's my big takeaway for going into the schedule look.
Madison, you got anything?
Yeah, I think it's similar to what Jake said. I think that there was a lot of times that we were getting ourselves stuck in really, really bad innings. We just would let, five, six runs up all at once. And I think the help of, Blake and Chandler hopefully not having to pitch as many innings is going to help because I think
Yeah.
it mentally was exhausting. Like, not physically, it was obviously exhausting, but I think mentally, when that happens game after game and it gets really hard to, continually keep throwing into the zone and throwing strikes. And I think this year we'll hopefully see a lot less walks because of that. And then because our strength of schedule is so much lower, I think even if our team is, maybe takes a bit of a dip because, we lose Emma Kalf. But we're looking forward to next year where we get a lot of really good, signing class. We have a really good signing class. But this year it's a perfect year where we could still do something great because our ACC schedule is so much easier. We don't have the top four teams. We don't have any of them, the top four ACC teams. Like we have Clearwater and then we have Virginia Tech and that's basically it. Like
Yep.
the rest of the schedule is very, very winnable. So I think it's not letting the team has to, like, when they go through that first couple of weeks, because all of those, we have six top 25 teams in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Not
Woohoo.
a statement for the rest of the season. And like after those 2 weeks, hit the reset and restart the season because I don't want to say I don't have hope. I think that they can come out of there, do some really great things, pull up some really good upsets. But if that gets in their head too much, it's going to lead them down a dark path at least for, a month or so. So that'll be big.
And I don't want to sell short either. We start with Alabama at home. I think that's Buzz Class, yeah, Buzz Classic,
Yeah, Buzz.
in that first week too. So there's a lot coming. This season starts hot. Don't be surprised if this team kind of, has a kind of a not middling, but just a very challenging start, and maybe
Yeah.
it'll be in a surprising place towards the end of the year. That's my prognostication, at least. Win a couple in Clearwater would be $1 million. Go split against Alabama. That would be, great positioning considering lots of hacks at quality power fives down the stretch that, they stand really fair shots of winning. That helps your strength of schedule too. So that's all I got. But
Yeah, I agree. It's a kind of a reload, not exactly a reloading year, but hopefully this turns into a good resetting year that has a clear trajectory for what next year can look like in terms of success. So, let me just read off these. We keep mentioning Clearwater. This is the one of the big opening softball tournaments, kind of like how basketball does its invitationals and stuff like that. This is the same for softball in Clearwater, Florida. This is the one you want to go to and get invited to. And yes, the thing is, you have to get invited to it. So yeah, as we mentioned, Stanford, there's also LSU, Minnesota, Northwestern, Tennessee, and Oklahoma State. We are playing them in that order over 3 days. So that is a it's a big thing. It's good, really good for just being a getting us on TV for one. Like getting national televised things is of the biggest brand opportunities for Georgia Tech, and this is one of them. So the fact that we are there is kind of a win in the first place, but we also want to win the games as well. So Jake, any last notes on this, on the at least on this front half of the schedule? I think we'll touch on this more later.
nope, I do want to make sure that we let Madison plug all the things she's doing before she goes, though. So.
Thank you. Yeah. So I like Jack said at the beginning of the show, I'm on the Ramblin' Wreck sports show that's on WREK 91.1. We are Sundays, 5 to 7 p.m.s. We also are on SoundCloud now, so that's really exciting. Because
Hey.
before, it was really hard for anyone to listen to our shows, but now it should be easier. So, unfortunately, starting just this semester, so all of our football stuff is gone, forever. But that's
Darn.
okay. But yeah, and then other than that, working on occasionally writing for All Yellow Jackets SI. But yeah, that's mostly it. So. Hopefully I can come back and talk with you guys again because it's nice. I love
Awesome.
listening to your podcast.
Thank you. No, we'll absolutely have you back on. We are fully intending on being a much deeper into softball and baseball this year than we have been in the past. So yeah, we will need the voices to help make sure that we are making sense and that we're not blaspheming about this team or something like that. I don't think we will, but we love having the voices.
Jack, I just want to put it out there that there was one year I caught every single home game that happened before finals in baseball and softball. Deep into baseball and softball. I don't know how much more you can ask of
That
me
was
than that.
that's when you lived on campus
Is
though, which
this me resting on my laurels of 2019?
I
Yeah,
mean, maybe
yeah.
that's so long ago.
But
Oh my
it
God.
was a long
Anyway,
time. I'm old.
anyways,
All right.
my goodness,
Yeah.
Madison, thanks for coming on. We'll talk soon again.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. I'll talk to you later.
Yep.
Yep, sounds good. All right, we're going to roll into our, as usual, sponsored segment brought to you by Section 103. Today, I am wearing my Junior's Grill shirt because it goes great in the rotation. And one of the things I think gets a little slept on when you talk about Section 103 is I find it very easy to pair with a flannel or something different, so I don't necessarily look like I'm always attending a sporting event, but I'm always very comfortable and kind of work it into the rotation of when I'm just out on the town. Section 103, it's great for pairing with flannels, with all the great things that they do make as well, including the zip up tech sweater has become a classic pairing for me. So yes, dress it up, dress it down. Section 103 is great for every occasion. You can find them at Section 103 at section103.com. And yeah, a little bit different take on the stuff they bring to the table, but it's unique, it's comfortable, and it really goes with quite a bit of navy, white, gold, gray, black, and everything in between.
Coming back, Akshay's here. Now he's back from work after we had a how the schedule worked out today. So Akshay, before I hand the reins back to you, did you have any softball thoughts you wanted to get off your chest? I know we're gonna talk about the team all throughout the season, but was there any like, okay, just before we get going, here's just what I'm thinking about.
The only couple things as I look through our shot sheet here, and thank you, Jack, for manning the fort while I was out. The only major thing that it comes across here is Auburn Dupree transferring out to UAB. That is a really good player. I think that UAB is getting an ACC quality starter, both in the field and on the play. I think she was a little bit inconsistent later in the year, but still really, really good glove. Really wish we could have kept Emma Kauf for a fifth year,
I
and
know.
Oregon is getting a very, very good player. That one is tough. That's
It
really,
hurts.
really tough.
One of our discussion points was like, well, you're not gonna get a one for one replacement of her, which that's when you have those kind of departures, yeah, your that point is
I would
very
love
salient.
to do like a Moneyball bit here and say that you can replace her in the aggregate, but the amount that she was
Jake may have said that.
contributing
Jake
to
may
this
have said you could.
offense. I mean, look, baseball's not my sport when it comes to this kind of stuff, but you would need to see a lot. You need to see a couple of players elevate their game in
Right.
24 to really replace that kind of talent. I mean, she's really good. Like I was really, really impressed.
Let me
And
mention Auburn
Oregon's getting a
Dupree's.
good player, so.
Yeah, let me mention Auburn Dupree's numbers while we have her brought up. 233 average. She's played in 43 games, started only 28. So I think mentioned that second half drop off wasn't starting as many games. She was 12 of 15 stealing bases though, which was good, and a
She
9 of
was a
40.
really big threat on the base paths as well. I forgot about that.
And believe it or not, actually, so we were second in the country and not in the country in the ACC in fielding percentage. Auburn was of our worst, 943. Every other starter was at least a 955.
Interesting. Since where are some more
But still
advanced
good. That's still
stats?
good, but
Yeah,
relative.
this is where like more advanced stats for softball would help, and I think they're, I know that softball has an analyst on staff now, and they've been using 6-4-3 a lot the last couple of years. So, hopefully, some of that stuff comes to fruition. I don't know. This is usually where I say always a good thing to have more data and have more information. So, I think I'm gonna stick with that and hope that everything goes well. In 24, Mr. Purdy, Mr. Grant, let's switch gears. Let's talk about NFL Conference Championship weekend for a couple of minutes, as we did have former Georgia Tech athletes, excuse me, on all four teams. Let's talk about the AFC Championship game first. Kansas City advances to Las Vegas. They beat Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. Harrison Butker gets his chance to go for a Super Bowl ring number three. I think if he were to win it, that would make him the most decorated NFL for Tech. Am I mistaken in that?
I think you're probably correct because looking at the media guide of the number of folks that have played in Super Bowls for Georgia Tech, the only people that would have a shot at three are Dorsey Levens, who played in Super Bowls 31, 32, and 39.
Oh man, Dorsey Levens takes me back. Oh man, that's an old
Well, this
name.
is not the oldest name I'm going to name. Shaq Mason, if the Eagles had not won in 2018, would have had three. And then the only other guy to appear in three is Bill Curry. Super Bowl one with the Packers, Super Bowl three with the Colts, and Super Bowl five with the Colts, the Baltimore Colts. That is, I don't know what happened in Super Bowls three and five, so actually don't know if he has three or not. But Butker
Three, he
will.
doesn't. He won five, I'm pretty sure. Three was the Jets.
Gotcha.
The guarantee.
So
Joe Namath's guarantee.
Butker is now going to be the first ever Georgia Tech Yellow Jacket to have appeared in four Super Bowls.
Pretty good stuff. Yeah, he's a kicker, but also kickers do not have longevity in that
No, you
sport.
have to be good
You
to stick
get
around. You got to be good to stick around.
chewed up and tossed if you do not hit kicks sometimes. So
Or
it
you're there forever and become ancient.
I mean, that's the track that he's on right now. I mean, Adam Vinatieri played like what, 20, 23 years? So
Him, Janikowski, Matt Bryant, all these guys. Yeah, they were around longer than most than like what, 8 times the career length of the average player or something like that? Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean the average career length is 3. Bryant was around for just under 20, I think. So
Yeah.
yeah, you're pushing 7, 8 times there. The only other, I guess, moving to the NFC game, I don't want to do fourth down discourse. I wrote an entire article about it, so I'm going to refer to that, I think.
Yep, I agree.
Mike Florio is not good at his job, I think, is the entire summary of my day today. It's a shame that people feel like using data as a cudgel, or the idea of using data as a cudgel instead of like actually thinking about the take that they're making.
Right.
I also
Yeah.
don't think that game came down to those decisions.
Not at
There was
all.
a
Not at
tweet I
all.
saw earlier that mentioned a couple of dropped passes and unfortunately Jahmyr Gibbs' fumble as higher EPA plays than the a higher EPA and a higher lower, I don't know, they're negative
Higher magnitude
win
EPA.
probability, yeah, higher magnitude plays than those fourth down decisions. But you know, when you do the unorthodox thing, you're going to get burned at the stake for it. So credit to Dan Campbell for sticking to his principles. I think we were saying this last night too.
I will say there's always an aviation angle in things. American and United added flights from Kansas City to Las Vegas. Can you guys guess what that flight number is?
Oh, I already know what these are, so I'll let Akshay guess before I say.
There's something 8713, something like that.
You're very close. Yes, the flight
8715.
the flight to Las Vegas is flight 1989, and the flight back is flight 87. Yep.
I Which 87
Unbelievable.
is like it,
Whoa,
double digit
number.
and single digit flight numbers are, dare I say, kind of prestigious. So they pulled that off of something,
I mean,
or they weren't using
if
it.
you're
I
going
don't
to be a
know.
three-time
But
Super Bowl champ, that's prestigious right there, man.
all right, while
Let's
we're
go.
on
Let's
the
move on.
topic, I
All
don't
right,
want to.
go.
I don't want to get us canceled by the Swifties. But I
Well,
do
that's
want to
I'm
say,
one of them, so I will cancel you
I
if I
saw a
have to.
take on LinkedIn from a LinkedIn influencer that said part of the reason, or said in uncertain terms, let's say that part of the reason for the increase in Super Bowl ticket prices since the championship game matchup was decided was because of Taylor Swift. And I just cannot imagine
Let me
the
tell
life
you.
of
No
last
way. It's
no.
because people now are buying them because they know their team's in it.
Well,
Yeah,
also,
no, there's that. And I cannot fathom the thought process behind buying an $11,000 ticket to a championship sporting event, which is, to be fair, those tickets are in short supply as it stands because the
yes.
NFL gives a bunch of them away to corporate sponsors and partners and team sponsors and whatever.
Yep.
$11,000 ticket to possibly see a woman who is going to be sitting in a box.
Yep.
What is the thought process?
I will note, this is my last note, and I guess because I found this really funny. If you live in Canada, FanDuel Canada, there are betting odds for if Travis will propose on the field. Yes is plus two fi yes is plus 250. The no is minus 310. If you are a Canadian listener of Silence of the Southland, I feel like this is the easiest money you might ever get in your life. Because she'll
Wait,
be in Japan that day.
haven't they only been dating for like 5 months? Am I missing something here?
It's going really well.
Well, that's good. Congrats to According
them.
to, well, FanDuel Canada wants it to be going really well.
Right, let's
Well,
move
I
on.
guess maybe they don't actually, because they'd lose a bunch of money on that one.
I don't know. I don't know. Let's talk med status while before we go too far.
Let's go to men's tennis. A weekend visiting the future and a future ACC state or current ACC state, California. They had 2 7-set decisions, a loss 4-3 versus Pepperdine, and then a 4-3 win today versus UC Santa Barbara. I think what we've been saying with this team is that they play so many of these that at some point they've got to break, a text away. And they got one of them. Maybe not the other one, but they got one of them. So I don't know. Do either of y'all have any more on these two games? I don't know if we were able to catch a lot of these.
Would have been nice to grab Pepperdine. They're a good program, men's and women's tennis. And then wins a win, UCSB, pretty solid program there too. I will say, coming up, getting Georgia State. They usually, I don't know. I don't know if struggle's the right word for it, but it's always closer than you might think, or that it is in other sports. So keep an eye out on that one. That usually borders on some level of interesting to high alert. So keep an eye out for this upcoming match.
The only
He's
thing
put up a tornado watch.
I noticed in the I'm looking at the doubles lineup against Pepperdine, there was a little bit of a change. Martin usually plays line three with Chris Aurora. He swapped with Gabrielle Brancatelli. So Martin and Biagiotti played line two together and did not finish because Brancatelli and Aurora had one to help get the doubles point solved. Singles wise, Marcus following in two sets. That's new. He's been solid. This is the first draw, I guess. Not great match he's had. I'm gonna find the pepper the UCSB scores though in a second here.
I think, they're kind of due for a stinker every so often, for as good as they are. I think we saw that with Martin a couple of times here and there, right? He would go on a run. I think even like middle of last year, he just lost a couple of random singles matches in straight sets. It was super odd. I don't
For
know.
UC for the second match, yeah, so we won on Andres Martin got the clinching point on one. He won 7-6, 6-3. Must have been a long first set if they finished last. Considering Sachdev won in three no, he was also a two set win. So yeah, that was good. Chopra also won his match. And then I assume we won the doubles. I don't know if we won the doubles. The Twitter doesn't say. Oh well. We won anyways. That's all that matters.
I think the last note for me on men's tennis is that state matchup at home is always not, it's not just a point of intrigue, it's also a really good atmosphere. I think we've gone a couple of
Yeah.
times
Oh,
here and
yeah.
there, and it is a genuine like rivalry atmosphere, and that's I think part of the reason why it gets so competitive. It is a packed indoor facility for those games. So if you're in town and got something to do, I think that's Friday at 2 p.m.
I'll have
Might as
to
well take it
be
in.
early.
I'd say this and Georgia Southern baseball are probably the two non-UGA in-state series that have the most regular intrigue. Kennesaw State softball got kind of spicy the year or two after we picked off Trisha Awald from the Owls. But Southern for baseball and State for men's tennis, those are pretty without fail some interesting matchups there.
Moving on to the women's side of the house, they were in Charlottesville for ITA kickoffs. They knocked off Wisconsin in their first game 4-3, a huge comeback win. They were down 3-1 at one point. Mahak Jain won the clincher in singles. I don't have that score immediately in front of me because I am not entirely a prepared podcaster today, but I do have the score for the UVA match that came after, which was a 4-0 sweep of Georgia Tech, unfortunately. Any notes from y'all on these two games?
Yeah, the UVA, we've talked about them. They're pretty good. They were also the host. We're playing in their building. They're a top 11 team. Interestingly, Wisconsin-Madison rates out very similarly to Central Florida. I think that's probably something you'd flag in that, maybe a 4-0 sweep at the hands of UCF is a bit fluky, kind of happened in a big atmosphere at the UTS, the United States tennis facility down there. But yeah, Wisconsin-Madison is an 11-7 and 24th in the country in the most recent rankings. UCF a 23. Granted, it did take some things to fall Tech's way. I think it's a fair way to put it. They played really hard to really squeak out a 4-3 win. Jack, you're looking a little
I
like
got the
I'm
score. Well,
mischaracterizing that.
no, you're
Like,
characterizing it right because I'm looking at the scores and
yeah,
we just barely, like, we just barely won this.
you know the phrase, the
Oh, it's a
skin of your
squeaker.
teeth? It this is they won by the skin of their teeth. They needed
Oh,
every
yeah.
last point to win this
And
match.
then some,
But
and literally, and then some.
yeah, I think it's probably indicative of where this team is at. Maybe a little bit below our initial prognostication, but they do seem to be a fringe top 25 team. Is that a fair point? I don't know. UVA and UCF maybe tell us otherwise, but that's kind of on any given day type variance
They
too.
haven't played at home yet. They played on
That's
the road this
true.
whole time. Like we haven't even played with their, like I haven't been able to see them once and see like how good they actually are. How are they just the, get the vibe check? Like they have not been able to get a single bit of that.
Just to recap these scores, since I also have them in front of me. Tech took the doubles point with wins by Kylie Bilchev and Alejandra Cruz over and given Roach and Scarlett Nicholson, who I don't think we've talked about a whole lot. That name is new to me. Both over Wisconsin. That's a 6-4 win for Bilchev and Cruz and a 6-2 win for Roach and Nicholson. And then in singles, 1, 2, three of these matches that Tech won went to third sets, with the clincher for Mahak Jain going 6-4, 2-6, 7-6 with a 10-8 tiebreaker. So every last drop of sweat in the towel has been wrung out to win this one.
Yep.
Every last drop of juice in that orange. So a really, really good performance, really, really gritty performance for Tech on the road in Charlottesville. The other two matches, singles matches that Tech won, Carol Lee beat Maria Shokolova of Wisconsin 7-6, 7-4, and then 6-3. So the 7-4 tiebreaker. And then Scarlett Nicholson, we mentioned earlier, defeated familiar name, Rosie Garcia Gross of Wisconsin 7-6 with a 7-5 tiebreaker, and then 7-6 again with an 8-6 tiebreaker. So palace intrigue,
Ooh.
run amok here for sure. Very interesting set of results. And then we talked about the UVA match, which is a 4-0 sweep. Women's tennis is now back at home for a couple of days. They'll be at home on Tuesday. So today, when you hear this, a 4 p.m. tip, I guess. First pitch. I don't know. Tennis is
First
weird
serve,
names.
first serve.
First serve. There we go. Words are hard. Versus state. So that's a two. Both tennis teams will play state this week. And then at the weekend, they will be in Columbia, South Carolina to face off against South Carolina. That is a Friday noon first serve at Columbia. Let's switch gears again to our third or fourth gear here. Let's move over to men's basketball. One bit of Pro Jackets transfer news. I don't really know how basketball transfers work, but this did come across my desk earlier in the weekend. Moses Wright, who you might remember from that 2021 ACC championship team, moved from his club in Turkey, Merkez Efendi, definitely butchered that, over to Olympiakos in Greece. I didn't see any transfer fee or any sort of financial details. I think Wikipedia had him on a 2-year contract. It was contracted for all of 24 with an option for 25. So, I mean, he's bouncing around in the Euro leagues. Pretty good way to make a living. I
Yeah,
don't
I
know.
mean, good for him there. I have no idea how transfers work. That's beyond my area of sports expertise. That being
Eurobasket
said,
is wild. That is all that I know. Eurobasket is insane.
in terms of the results from this week, I'm going to just kind of be brief here because this is not going to be a fun conversation for any of us to have. Let's just say that Georgia Tech played reasonably well against Pittsburgh. It was a 72-64 loss. Shooting from three wasn't as good as we've seen, 32%, 39% from the field, 75% from the free throw line. Can't really nitpick that because you let the other team shoot 44% from both the field, from the field in general, and 3-point range as well. Again, nothing crazy with fouls. Didn't turn over the ball more than the other team, anything like that. It was just they can't really, I don't want to say defend, but that you can't reasonably expect to win when you let the other team shoot 44%. And this is doubly so when you go on the road and let Virginia Tech shoot 51.5%, and or sorry, 55 percent. I was reading the first half numbers because I'm silly. Anywho, all that to say, I had it down wrong in the Pittsburgh game too. They let him shoot 48%, and it's why you see Pitt pull away. Virginia Tech, it was never particularly close after going down 7, 10 points early. And I don't know. I think it's emblematic of the worst traits of this team having shown us this far. I don't know. You can't really pin it on one person or anything in general. It's just a general inability to stop plus position talent. Struggled down low, especially against Virginia Tech. If you're either fouling or letting somebody score, that is hurting yourself either way. So I think the defense, much as Damon Stoudamire correctly predicted at the be or not predicted, but ascertained at the beginning of the year, he said, "Hey, and Jack, you've said this a couple times. Like, it's an offense that's in front of the defense, and I think that shows." And like I said, this team has been in so many games that they've played that I do legitimately believe that they're better than their 9-11 record. But the Virginia Tech game is as ugly as we've seen this year, if not more so than the UGA or Cincinnati games. So it's a young or raw team, I think is a better way to put it. There's plenty of experience on this team, but they are very raw. And I mean, their first year under new coach, just hiring a new guy is not a balm over everything. And I think this is something that's going to take time. This year was not going to go. I think our ceiling was at best a fringy bubble team to an NIT team, and that was the high end. So it's not going to say it's going to be slog this year, but a great UNC team who has not yet lost to conference comes into the building tomorrow night. So
We are now one for our last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and we took the double OT to get the Clemson game down. So, yep, the ACC is doing the damage against us. It's doing damage against us for sure. So, and we barely won again. Some of those games up front, the non-con portion, we barely pulled out anyways as well too. So, I mean, it's all winning two ranked games. Fantastic when we did. And then Clemson, but yeah, it's that this is a high variance team, and which usually means that the lower variance is going to be more frequent than the high end of that too. So I'll note I didn't really watch either of these games because I just for whatever reason didn't end up watching them. But I just got to note that we wore gray uniforms against Virginia Tech. We've only won one game in gray unis this year across all sports, and that was one random, not random, but a women's basketball game. I think it was just a cupcake game that we wore them for. We just gotta stop doing this, guys. I know it's not the uniforms, but we gotta put these in the
Look, they
biggest
just have to
fire we can
live
find.
up.
The
They have to
uniforms
live
did
up to the
not,
dream
they don't
of
do
the
anything.
Gray
No, they do nothing.
Devils.
The uniforms did not help against FSU because let me tell you, they looked pretty good most of the time and then collapsed in disappointing and epic fashion in a way that really made me feel
For the women, yeah. For the women, yeah.
the full brunt of that 9-point loss to Florida State. Not to forcibly transfer us out of men's basketball, but to be completely honest, neither of these are going to be very fun to talk about.
No, not at
And I say
all.
that with full love for both teams. I do think they're both improving in really key ways, and it's not really translated very well all that much, especially for the men. The women, 13-8, pretty decent. But man, what a week
I know.
for the big sports in action this week.
I don't know who's in charge of the uniform stuff on the women's basketball side, but I wish we've learned in the men's side. Like, I thought we learned the lesson from the Bowling Green game. We can't wear this other stuff. We just can't do it.
I will say the glow-in-the-dark uniforms for a, what was that, a noon kick game
3:30,
was
but it was
bit.
specially cursed. That was a special curse that
Hey, noon is now, hey, that's noon 30 on the West Coast, which is now an ACC coast as well.
right.
So
That's right. Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
you
So.
gotta consider it. You just have to consider it. But yes, this is that FSU game doubling back there. That is a 78-67 loss at home to FSU. I will say the way that I think we need to paint this a little bit brighter because they did keep this close
Let's
for
back.
the
Well, this.
vast. What's up?
Well, there was a game before that too that we didn't that I just had to throw in the sheet. They
Yeah, well,
played.
that you can,
Well,
dig and bury.
I just want to mention it just at least in the terms of very important things happened here, and that Caleb Blackshear got hurt in that game and then didn't play at all against Florida State. And we looked Elizabeth Kitley did Elizabeth Kitley things against us, and we didn't exactly have a chance to stop her. She went 8 of 8 in the first quarter, and that was effectively the game. Garbage time didn't really happen until the fourth quarter. Tony Morgan did get her career high in points too. But outside of that, not much there. But that did mean we were shorthanded for the first time in a re I mean, Inez has been gone a couple times, but losing Kayla is a massive, massive blow to this team. And so that meant Aisha Wan Aranha had to play extra minutes, which, as I mentioned in my articles and on here, that's not great. It's not good.
But again, to this team's credit, if we're painting with a brighter color here, they kept this close and they were ahead for vast stretches of the first, I don't know, the first 35, 30, like for 32 minutes, right? Like
I don't know. Just kidding.
I was box score watching while football was on, so I kept up to date a little bit, but they were ahead. They were really competitive, and then FSU's Taniya Lotson just went supernova in the fourth quarter, and FSU outscored Tech by 15 in the fourth, and that was the game. That was more or less it.
This girl, Taniya Lotson, has scored 30 to 33 points every single time we've played her. That's all three times so far. She murders us. It's just this to other teams normally. Like, this is an uncommon occurrence. And she takes a crap ton of shots. She took double the shots anyone else in the team took for Florida State, but also got to the line 11 times. Like, she just does everything. And we don't have the defensive answer for that right now.
And she just, I think another thing, if you take it from another angle, she took over this game in a way that I don't think, like, I don't think Tech has that kind of person
No, Tony hasn't
on
turned
their
into
side of
that.
the fence either.
Yeah, Tony hasn't turned into that fully. Granted, there's only been so, but yeah, like when we've needed to turn on the Jets and get ahead, like grind our way to a win, it's not often it's her doing
And
that.
I guess I'll add a little bit more to this. I think there have been players that have had those kinds of performances in certain circumstances. I think Kara Dunn did that a couple times earlier in the season. That's why Tech got off to a pretty good start. But there's no one that does it with consistency,
No,
right?
not at all.
There's no one that you can sort of go, here's the ball, it's on you. Or like, here's the ball, it's your game. Let's go win this. And I think there is, I'm usually the data guy, but there, like I think there is a value to that, having a consistent playmaker, especially late in the games. And Lotson was that for FSU, and Tech didn't necessarily have that on the other end.
Yeah, that's I think that's right. You gotta have a you have to have a game manager, like someone who actually is just going to completely dictate the pace of the game and how
Yeah,
things are gonna go
I
on and
mean
move forward.
that's like not even a game manager in like the derogatory sense. That's
No,
just
that's
like
positive. Yeah, that's a
a
positive way to
field
say that.
general kind of
Yeah.
type,
Field
right? A
general is
court
better.
general kind of type.
Yeah, I like
Yeah.
that. I like
So
that.
I think that's just something as this team continues to grow, continues to evolve, like and I think we've said this a couple times, someone is going to have to step up into that role. So we'll see how that shakes out. I don't think the road gets any easier for them this week. Because on
Oh God.
Thursday, they'll host Notre Dame. That's a 7 p.m. tip on ACC Network Extra. So, tough little
Remember
stretch.
when Notre Dame was like down for like 1 year and then
I
immediately
know.
returned to being a juggernaut? I don't remember that either now. It
I know.
feels like it
I
never
know.
happened. That 1 year coincided. I think we lost to Notre Dame twice that year.
Yeah, but they were still like not as good as they usually are, and now they're back to being just as good as they've always been. Thank you, Muffet McGraw and the gang. Well, I guess she's now retired, but you know what I mean.
She's now retired and doing great media work for ACC Network.
Yeah,
Yeah, I do.
the year we beat UConn, we did lose to Notre Dame, in overtime. That was part of that back-to-back overtime stretch we had.
Oh my
That
gosh,
was
I
great.
remember that game. I was at that. Actually, I
Yeah.
think we were both at that game. That was,
Yeah, and
oh.
I was pissed.
Ugh. That game was rough. That
I
game was rough.
remember
Yes.
being livid at the refereeing. Legitimately
Well,
livid.
they would just take it in. We don't need to go down this path. Jack, I know you've got
We don't.
a
We
hard
don't.
stop coming up, so I want to make sure we're
I
respecting everyone's
think,
time today.
obviously, Notre Dame, I think they're still top 10, if I remember correctly, at least at worst, top 15. Hannah Hidalgo has been not just a difference maker, but a genuine star for them. So I am honestly, from just like a spectacle perspective, I'm kind of interested in watching this game. So
They dropped to 14th,
it'll
actually.
be fun.
They dropped to 14th.
Let's
I think
move.
they had a loss though, so that's all.
Fair enough. Let's move on to track and field. Another week, another Clemson Invitational that's named something different. This time it was Bob Pollock. Mr. Grant, I figure that you have the results up for me. Anything stand out to you?
I will say we do joke often that the Clemson invites happen all the time, but at least they're consistent in the order in which they happen each year. So I will give them that. In terms of results, there were a couple of podiums. Amelia Wilson third in the women's long jump. I think there was one other off the top of my head on day one. Second place finish. By Nick Nyman in the mile. Again, good to see there. It was a 2-day invite. I believe there was also a few third places and a no second places, just a pair of third places on the second day. So nothing too crazy. I mean, I've said this before and I'll say it again. Track and field is really tricky in terms of prognosticating. Unlike and swimming's kind of like this too. I just was in the sport more. You don't always send a full roster or everyone have a full roster doing A events. So it's a little bit tough to say, well, they got third here, so we should expect XYZ at the ACCs. I think the first time we'll get a true top to bottom data point on this team is in a couple weeks here at ACC Championships. And then, to be quite honest, we probably won't get another great comparison point until, I don't know, probably pretty close to the next ACCs. So, in the meantime, it is good to call out some stellar individual performances, but I don't believe we had any school records or anything like that other than the podiums.
Good stuff. Let's switch over to the aquatic version of track and field, swim and dive, who had their senior day over the weekend. Not a ton to note here. A lot of people graduating. A lot more
Yeah.
than I thought were up for graduation based on when I looked at the roster earlier this year. I don't know. Anything notable stand out to you from senior day, Jake?
Yeah, I want to call out the first meet of the weekend first. That was a men's and women's showing against South Carolina. That was on Friday the 26th. The interesting note that I had there is that the men did win 187 to 113 and put good distance between them. But I said that this meet, the one thing I really wanted to see was how the women stacked up against a ranked South Carolina team. I think outside of kind of your top 25, it gets a little bit not necessarily fringier, but to you want to get good comparison points is all. And they did keep it close. 169 to 131 is closer than we've seen against comparable teams in the past. Oh, one other thing. I don't think we caught this last week. They did swim. The women hosted Miami last Friday. Miami being a pretty solid ACC program and kind of blew them out of the water, 174 to 76. So if you want points of comparison, that's where I'd go to. In terms of senior day, Carson Newman, I think they're D2 off the top of my head. ECU, I think ECU only brought the women's team, if I'm remembering. Yeah, women's team for ECU. So really the main brunt of the competition was ECU and they only swam against the ladies. So like I said, South Carolina is the big data point we'd want to look at this weekend. I do want to add one more point. Georgia Tech, I did update the cap after this. The men are sitting at 28th with 23 top 100 finish, top 100 finishes. That is pretty solid. I'd say index to the number one team, that's like a 0.135. It's kind of exponential in there. So that might sound a little bit low, but 20, pretty good to be. The ladies are 39th with 15 top 100 finishes as well. Look for them to be back in action coming up with the Auburn last chance meet coming up the 9th. So that's Friday and Saturday, I believe, the 10th. And then 2 weeks after that, they'll be at ACC, or a week after that, they'll be at ACC's.
That 28th ranking is interesting to me because in the latest coaches poll, the men's team was 23rd. So they're tracking a little bit ahead of where their underlying metrics would have them. I think that 39 number is right around where the women's team has been historically, or at least like when we, as long as we've been doing this, right?
Yep. And Tech does generally on the men's side tend to track a little bit behind the coaches poll, and that could be due to, identification of top line talent. But I do favor depth. I'm a little bit of a sucker for that. And you got a lane, you got a chance. So I think there's a couple other teams out there with maybe a little bit more of that rounded depth than Georgia Tech, and that's what we're seeing in the numbers.
Good to me, gentlemen. I think that is going to be all for us this week. Any final notes before we get out of here?
If you're on campus, the Edge building looks to be like closed because they have a sign now that just says the building's closed basically for construction purposes. So it looks like everyone's out.
I've got a real quick trivia if you guys are into it.
Shoot.
Quick, quick.
All right. So I discovered that Georgia Tech has played one of our future conference mates disproportionately in a particular sport. Do you guys have any guess as to which one that is?
SMU tennis.
It is SMU, but it's actually men's basketball, followed up by football. Bobby Dodd had a proclivity for playing their football team in the late 50s and early 60s, but I didn't realize that at the same time, so did Wack Hyder in men's basketball. And for a number of years, starting in 1959 and lasting all the way through 1971, every December, Georgia Tech and SMU traded back and forth, home and away each year. I'd say a home and home, but it went on for 12, 13 years. So I thought that was pretty interesting. I thought to look this up today because for the first time, our friends over at the Basketball Conference podcast, Joey Weaver and Mike McDaniel, were talking about Cal, Stanford, and SMU's ACC schedule. So I figured I would look up how often we played all those. For the record, on the football side, that's 11 times we played Southern Methodist, 7 Cal in football, including the 1928 Rose Bowl, and two for Stanford. But yeah, SMU the most overall with 33, led by 14 basketball matchups and 11 football matchups. So truly, truly disproportionate there.
Good stuff, Mr. Grant. Thank you for joining us today, Mr. Purdy. Thank you as well. Let's go home. Take us out.
Yeah, as always, you can find us at fromtherumbleseat.com. Please give us all of your comments, suggestions, all of the wonderful things we like to hear. That shapes what we do here and on the site. So let us know what you like, what you don't, and what you like to learn more about. You can also email us from therumbleseat@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at FTRSblog, at JakeGrant98, and at Jack Nicholas. You can find Section 103 there as well. Section 103, section103.com, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube at From the Rumble Seat, and podcasts wherever fine podcasts are distributed. Thanks again to Madison for coming on. Good night, good luck, and go Jackets.